And thank you to Eric Moline on the keyboards there, bringing us in with the Walt Bodine theme. Of course, it's Friday, and my name is Russ Simmons, so that means it's movie day here on the Walt Bodine Show. And our fearless leader, Walt Bodine, has taken the day off today, but we're going to carry on in his stead and talk about movies that have opened up over the last 3 weeks since our last appearance here. And we're also going to be talking about the Oscars. Of course, last Sunday was the big Oscar night. So we'd like to get your feedback. What did you think about the Oscar telecast? And also, what did you think about the winners? Did you think someone was cheated? Do you think that someone was overlooked? We'd like to hear your opinions on those, either on the acting categories or directing or perhaps even in Best Picture. Let us know what you thought. The number is 816-235-2888, or you can send us an email at waltbodineshow@kcur.org. Once again, I'm Russ Simmons, and today I'm joined by...
This is Loie Lockerbie. I freelance for the Kansas City Star, kcactive.com, and I have a blog now at suchacritic.com.
And I enjoy that.
Oh, good.
And my name is Eric Moline. I do the movie reviews for Kansas First News on TV in Topeka, and also scenestealers.com and lawrence.com.
And I have to say, I enjoy both of those as well.
Well, thanks, Russ.
Sure. Well, as long as we're continuing this love fest, let's talk about something we all loved.
Yes.
You know what? We talked about the Oscars a moment ago, and we're going to be getting your feedback on those Oscars. But there was a movie that won in the Best Foreign Language category that opens in Kansas City today. And I think we all three can say this is an outstanding movie that definitely deserved that Oscar. It's called A Separation.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the Iranian entry into the Best Foreign Language Film at the Oscars this year. And far and away, the critical favorite and front runner. I was really, really worried that Oscar was going to screw it up because in the foreign language film category, they've been known to do that a lot. But this is, again, it's an Iranian film. And it's really interesting because I was surprised that it was their submission because it's very critical of the social values and religious values that people have and also the society in Iran, the limitations that some of these things that they're beholden to place on them. And it's basically a family drama. It's about a father who has been married for 13 years, and his wife wants to divorce him because she wants out of Iran and wants to take their daughter with him. And he can't do that because he has to care, feels obliged to care for his father in Iran, who has recently come down with contracted Alzheimer's. And so the movie basically spirals, and this sounds horrible, it spirals downhill from there, but I can't stress enough, A Separation is not one of those depressing movies where it just, you know, beats you into submission. This is 2 hours of expertly plotted stories, interwoven stories from all these families, and everybody's trying to do the right thing in this film. It may be Iranian, and it may be a culture that we're not familiar with, but I think on some level, depending on who you are, you're going to be able to relate to the people in this movie. And what's fascinating is watching them all do the right thing, what they feel is the right thing, and how quickly out of control things get. And I just think the fact that it was also nominated this year, the only foreign film, for a screenplay award speaks volumes about how intelligent it is. And a lot of times when you see a movie with this much plot in it, trying to cover this broad of a spectrum of topics, it feels convenient. Like for me, something like Crash, where you have all these people talking about racism and all these way too convenient plot threads, and it just feels like a lecture after a while. This movie is not a civics lecture. It's very entertaining. It moves quickly, and by the time it's over, it'll leave you with all kinds of things to talk about.
Yeah, this is I was describing the plot of this to someone, and they said it sounded like a soap opera. And I said, you know, it sounds that way,
yeah.
But everything that happens is so organic and so natural that it doesn't feel that way when you're watching it. And I think it's fascinating. Asghar Farhadi is the director and writer's name, and he really balances this idea of some of it is very culturally specific. And you're seeing the tensions that exist in modern Iran between this very sort of conservative authoritarian society, but people who are, in fact, very modern and, you know, trying to live modern lives, especially the middle class family. And there's a lot in there about the class distinctions. and about, you know, different degrees of religiosity and what women are and are not allowed to do. But it is very universal. You were saying people can identify with them, and absolutely. I mean, how many people have had an elderly parent that they feel obligated to care for? How many people have had the arguments? The arguments between the couple are just so completely universal. You know, how many kids whose parents have split up try to kind of manipulate them into getting back together? You know, and people, they do try to do the right thing, but they also will twist the truth, spin things, even lie for their own benefit.
And at times, as we all do,
yeah,
right?
I mean, you know, that's a perfectly natural response.
Sure.
And they also, you know, well, what do they remember? There's an incident whose interpretation is absolutely key to the rest of the movie. And, you know, I found myself thinking, okay, now wait a minute. Did he really hear that or not? You have to think back to that scene. And it's really quite extraordinary. And I haven't seen very many movies from any country as well made as this one. And I think if there is a critique of Iranian society in there, it's so subtle that that's probably why Farhadi has not gotten in trouble the way some other Iranian filmmakers have in his home country. Because it really, I think, not so much even a critique as it is just this is life, you know, and you could tweak it a little bit and set it in any culture. But there are elements of Iranian culture that lead the story along. So,
and it's non-judgmental in the
completely,
way it's presented.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's,
you have to go into it with an open mind. But what's great about this movie is that it forces you to think, and that's a good thing from my point of view. This screenplay is so brilliant. I think that it really should have won the Oscar for Best Screenplay because it presents an ongoing set of moral conundrums. As you said, Eric, the people are all trying to do the right thing from their perspective, and that also it always presents another challenge for the next person, and then they make a decision, and that presents a challenge to someone else, and it just snowballs, and it's the sort of thing that forces the audience to go, wow, what would I do if I were in their shoes? What decision would I have made? So it's almost like a game of scruples in some ways. So it just, but as it plays out, I think that it does sound a little depressing on the surface as we talk about it, but you know what, this movie is so stirring that I think most people will not find it depressing at all, but will just find it very stimulating because
Absolutely.
It will force you, as I said, to think, which in my opinion, for a movie, is a very, very good thing.
Right.
Let's go with – oh, go ahead.
Well,
Eric.
I was just going to say on a political level, I think it's worth addressing that just this morning on NPR, I heard Obama talk about how he is not afraid to bomb Iran. And we surely on some political level, experts in that are going to know more than me. But I think it's really interesting to get a movie that comes out of Iran that humanizes the people that live in that country, and we can look beyond them as from a political level, we can look at the people that actually live in the country. And I don't think there's any movie in recent memory that gives us a better picture of what society is like in a country that we hear so many horrible things about and has so much upheaval.
And mm-hmm. you can see a little bit of that huge chasm between average Iranians and their government.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you talk to anybody from Iran and, you know, their lives and their beliefs and their ideas and what they want, in many cases, completely opposite from what their government's up to.
And that critique
and,
is clear.
And they can't do that much about it. They try and they get shot.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a very, very tough situation for them, too.
And as portrayed here in the movie, the government bureaucrats are in a frustrating situation, too.
Yeah.
They're trying to do the right thing. It's not a critique of them. It's just another situation where they're in a hard spot. What do they do? They
right.
have to make these profound decisions that are going to affect these people's lives.
I was surprised how much I liked the judge.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, because you keep thinking this guy has so much power and he's working for a system that, you know, would allow him to do pretty much whatever he wants. But he's trying to listen to everybody and trying to be fair-minded about it, which, you know, admirable.
Okay. So out of 5 stars, where are we at?
Five.
Five.
Five. Let's make it a unanimous, a separate. Hope we haven't oversold it.
Too bad.
Too late.
Yeah. That's a Separation rated PG-13, and it's playing at the art houses here in Kansas City. Opens today. So it gets our highest recommendation, I think. From the other end of the cinematic spectrum, there's a movie that also opens today called Project X, rated R. this is kind of the latest in the ongoing raunch fest that Hollywood is so fond of. I suppose if I were sitting in the pitch room when the filmmakers are trying to get the producers to pony up the money for this, I can hear them saying it's Blair Witch meets Risky Business. And that's sort of it. So it's another one of these found footage, quote unquote, handheld camera work. There's always a character who's got the camera and he's recording everything that goes on. But the plot reflects Risky Business. As you'll recall from that kind of minor classic comedy, it's a teenager who's home for the weekend and his parents are away and he holds a party in his house and all hell breaks loose. Well, that's what happens in this movie as well, although the hell that breaks loose in Project X is much greater and farther over the top than Risky Business.
Well, I have a quick question for you since I didn't see the film. Is the party because the person is trying to in other words, in Risky Business, he breaks this or loses this you know, object that his parents are really going to miss when he's gone. Is he doing this to try to get – or is it just I want to have a party?
It's a birthday party.
Okay.
Kids, I believe it's his 17th birthday, and he's a nerd, and his fellow nerds, you got to be cool. The way to be cool is to have this big party at your house. We'll invite everybody, and you'll be the toast of the town. And so what happens is he gives in and decides to have this party as long as everybody stays outside and everything – you know, okay, it can be a few – you know, maybe a dozen people by the pool, and that's all. Well, of course – it escalates, it gets on the internet, and the next thing you know, you have just about every person you can imagine crashing the party. And there are moments, I will say, that are funny, but for the most part, you know, this kind of anarchy goes a long way for me. You know, it's like, okay, I've seen this, been there, done that. You could go to, you know, Lawrence or Columbia probably on a weekend and see the same kind of thing. Just go to the party. And it's the sort of thing that I think in some ways is pandering to a young audience, trying to get them. This is going to be the hippest thing you're going to see. This would be your vicarious way of going to one of these big college parties. Or, you know, it's not a college party, it's high school. But going to one of these parties that will be the party of a lifetime. But in my opinion, you know, it's just tired. We said that A Separation is a movie that forces you to think.
Yes.
Well, Project X is a movie that forces you not to. It demands that you not. Again, a few funny moments, but I think the best I can do for Project X is a 2. Loie, I think you were the only person to see a movie that has a strong Kansas City connection. We think this movie is still playing. We know it was last week. But let us know a little bit about Dorothy and the Witches of Oz.
Yeah, this was produced by a Kansas City native graduate of UMKC, and I feel terrible because I cannot remember his name. Nick Everhart, I think, possibly.
Okay. I bet you'll find out soon.
Yeah.
Someone will call
from
me.
What I can tell, it aired as a miniseries in other countries and then was edited to feature length for release here. And it basically posits that the Wizard of Oz books were based on a real experience. And Dorothy has grown up and is just living a regular life, but then all these strange magical things start happening that coincide with events in the books. And it's very complicated, and I'm not even going to try to explain how it all works. But it's actually quite clever, the way they work the Wizard of Oz stories into it and the way the modern world sort of clashes. And that's also combined with an incredible cheesy quality to the sets and costumes and some of the dialogue. Some of the lead actors, I don't think they have much acting experience. And then you compare that to, they got some good veteran character actors. Christopher Lloyd's in it. Mia Sara, how long has it been since we saw her in anything? Billy Boyd. Gosh, there's like
Sean
several.
Astin.
Yeah, Sean Astin's in it. Ethan Embry's in it.
I think there's some.
Yeah,
now
a little Lord
of the
Rings reunion there. Lance Henriksen.
Oh,
you know,
nice.
Some really good character actors in this movie, and they kind of show up how inexperienced the other actors are. I have a lot of admiration for the people who made this because they did it on a very low budget, completely independently, and they managed to make it fairly convincing. You know, again, despite some of the holes in the script, which I think may have to do with the fact that it was edited from something much longer and there's stuff that just doesn't quite gel. But I enjoyed it, and I think it you can kind of overcome some of the limitations and still get something out of it. So I'd give it 3 stars.
The director, we understand, is Lee Scott. It's mm-hmm. still showing at the AMC Studio 30. So and that's out in Olathe, right?
Yes.
So you still have an opportunity to see that one. The producer's name was Nick, though, that we correct?
Right.
Yeah. That
I think.
The local has
yeah,
a local
I think
connection.
I think Nick Everhart.
Nick Everhart, okay.
Forgot to write it down before he came in, sorry.
If you happen to know Nick, give us a call.
Or if Nick's listening.
Or if you have any other comments you'd like to make, give us a call at 816-235-2888. Or send us an email at waltbodineshow@kcur.org. After the end of the hour, we're going to be talking about the Oscars, but you don't have to wait. Give us a call now, and if you want to chime in and let us know what you thought about the winners or losers and give us your 2 cents, we're all ears. Let's talk about another movie that opens today. Eric, you were able to catch this one. It's a kind of a cult comedy called Tim and Eric's Billion Dollar Movie.
Yeah, Tim and Eric. What can I say about these guys? I guess first off, Russ and Loie, have you guys ever seen Tim and Eric? Awesome show. Great job.
Have not.
No.
Oh, man.
No, okay.
I really want you guys – I want somebody who isn't familiar with their brand of comedy to tell me what they thought of this movie because going in, they've done
– How many people who aren't fans of their show would even bother?
That's a good point. Well, that's why I was hoping you guys would have seen it or not. Maybe you should just because I feel like the uninitiated is going to be absolutely shocked when they see this film. I know that Roger Ebert gave it a half star.
Wow.
And he said that it's so bad it doesn't even deserve a spot in his next book about movies that suck really bad. And I didn't feel that way about it. I'm not going to recommend it. Okay, I'm probably on a 5-star rating. I'd probably give it a 2.5, which is pretty neutral. If you do like Tim Heidecker and Eric Wareheim, and you do like their show that ran on the Cartoon Network for 5 seasons, then you will like this movie. Their episodes were 11 minutes long on the Cartoon Network. 11 minutes long. And honestly, I think that they were able to edit things together and do enough crazy satire and parody with all of the special effects that you would expect from a 1981 industrial film. I mean, everything these guys do looks like it was done on absolutely no budget. That's part of the joke of this billion-dollar movie. But a 90-minute film, I think, is still a challenge for them, right? I mean, we're looking at a comedy duo that would perhaps be better off if they utilized the Zucker Abrams style of comedy, where Airplane and Naked Gun, where you throw a million jokes at the wall. And if 500,000 of them stick, you've got yourself a great movie. In this film, the first half an hour is packed with the kind of stuff that's great in the TV series. You've got cameos by people like Jeff Goldblum playing Chef Goldblum, which is I mean, it's just so ridiculous. Which is a guy who is telling you about the chairs that you're sitting in the movie theater, and how if you're not careful, it'll pour hot butter on your hands and leave you scalded because there's popcorn right there in your seat, and about how you put your feet in these stirrups and it spreads your legs apart, and that helps you enjoy the film better. I mean, just ridiculous things like this. And then they move from a Hollywood parody where Tim and Eric are supposed to make this billion-dollar movie. They spend it all on a Johnny Depp lookalike who turns out not to be Johnny Depp, which they didn't know, and Zach Galifianakis plays some sort of a hippie life coach. And the studio guys are Robert Loggia and William Atherton,
wow,
who most people will know as the big EPA jerk from Ghostbusters, the red-haired guy who everybody hates. So there's a lot of fun cameos in this film. But once it starts to develop more of a traditional type of plot, and each scene is not played out for complete laughs and complete parody, the movie kind of falls down. It gets a little bit boring, and for comedy like Tim and Eric's to work, it can't. It can't get boring. I think actually developing a plot in this film was their biggest flaw, and that perhaps they should have just stuck with what they do best and just keep those jokes flying, because really what they do with musical cues and editing, all sorts of crazy loops and the stuff and the weird actors they use that nobody's ever seen before that can't really act, they're making all these really interesting comments on how we perceive media and all the things that we take for granted. When a musical cue comes in and it's like, nah, 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 we're supposed to be feeling, you know, this at this point. Well, they do that when it's completely inappropriate. So, you know, they're pointing out how all this stuff works. And their comedy, I think, is very clever. So fans of the movie, I think, are going to dig it. For me, I have to say Will Ferrell, Will Forte, and all the other comedians, John C. Reilly, who show up in this film, they just can't save it when it starts to become too traditional. So, like I said, two and a half, I guess.
And me. Do you know what the rating is on that? I couldn't find a rating.
It's R.
It's R.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was wondering during one point if it's NC-17.
Oh, wow.
It's not. When Ray Wise comes on the screen from Twin Peaks,
oh my gosh,
know that it's time to start covering your eyes.
Oh,
all right.
No.
So that's Tim and Eric's billion-dollar movie rated R. We give that a 2.5. Before we take a break, I want to cover one more real quickly, but I want to thank our intrepid producer, Andrea Salenzi, who's always on top of it, and she has confirmed that the producer of Dorothy and the Witches of Oz is indeed Nick Everhart. Yay. So you got that right, Loy. One movie that opens today is, you know, from, you know, the other end of the cinematic universe from Tim and Eric, and that is Dr. Seuss's The Lorax, which is rated PG. This is a beautifully animated 3D feature, and I'm a little disappointed that Loy wasn't able to see it because I know you're a big fan of Despicable Me.
Yeah.
And this is from the filmmakers who brought us Despicable Me. And it's very cute. It's, of course, whenever you have a Dr. Seuss's story, which is very short, there's a lot of expansion that needs to take place in order to blow that up into feature length. But I thought they did a really commendable job. It's a story about a little woodland creature who's the protector of the trees, voiced by Danny DeVito. And there's an entrepreneur who's going to go in and chop down all the trees to make his special product that he's going to sell to the world. And he's voiced by Ed Helms. And there's another subplot with a young boy from the local town where everything is plastic, there are no real trees, and he wants to go see what he can do to find a real tree to give to his girlfriend. The boy is voiced by Zac Efron. The girl is voiced by Taylor Swift. And Kansas City's own Rob Riggle also provides one of the voices, the kind of the guy who runs the town, which is a character that's not in the book at all. But it has some cute moments. It's got some tunes that are kind of catchy, and the animation is really beautiful. It's eye-popping, and the use of 3D here, I think, is very strong. So this is one that I would definitely recommend, particularly to the younger crowd. But I did notice, you know, a lot of people are a little scared to take really little kids to a 3D movie because of the awkwardness with the glasses and so on. But at the screening I was at, there were a number of very little kids, and they wore the glasses, and they stuck with it, and they had a good time. And I think that probably that may be a fear that's maybe unfounded, at least in this particular case.
If they like the movie, they won't care.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it does capture their imagination. So I think, you know, this is a nice bit of environmentalism that doesn't hit you over the head with it so strongly that you'll be resentful. Although I have heard that there has been some negative feedback. And as a matter of fact, somebody posted on Facebook the other day about Lou Dobbs, who's taken exception to to the environmental message in The Lorax, being anti-entrepreneur.
Everything is ammo in the culture wars, isn't it?
It's so true.
We've got like three movies this week that have been used that way.
Yeah, I like this film a lot, so I think I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5 for Dr. Seuss's The Lorax. It's rated PG. And we're going to be taking a break here real quick. I want to remind everybody that you're listening to The Walt Boudin Show on KCUR, and we want to hear your feedback on any of the movies we're talking about, but in particular the Oscars, which took place last Sunday. Give us a call at 816-235-2888, or you can send us a note at waltboudinshow@kcur.org. We've got some announcements that we're going to be talking about after the break, and stick with us. We'll be back. And welcome back to the second half of the Walt Boudin Show. Of course, yesterday was a beautiful 73-degree day to get out and enjoy it, to stay outside. However, today
we have to the Midwest.
Snow showers, and it's chilly out there, so this is an ideal day to go to the movies.
There you go.
You can enjoy the comfort of the movie theater. We're talking about movies that have opened up over the last 3 weeks. We've covered what opens today, and we're going to be talking about some of the ones that have already opened. We would like your feedback. Give us a call, 816-235-2888, or send us an email at waltboudinshow@kcur.org. We're going to be talking about the Oscars, and we'd like to get your feedback. What did you think about the Oscars? Who lost that you thought should have won? Were you happy with the broadcast? What about Billy Crystal? Anything that's on your mind, just give us a call. We do have a quick announcement that we want to inform everybody about. Loy, I understand that this weekend you're going to Columbia, right?
No, that's
not
me.
Oh, you're not.
Andrea's.
Andrea's going to Columbia. Oh, okay. Our intrepid producer, Andrea Salenzi, is going to Columbia, and it's for the True False Film Festival. And for those of you who have never been there, I highly recommend it. This is an opportunity for you to see some really unique films. And over the last few years, True False has really grown into kind of the prominent, preeminent documentary film festival in the country. There have been a lot of people who have brought in their films. Of course, the filmmakers would be on hand for Q&A sessions and really seeing some interesting, stimulating documentaries. The times that I have been there, I have not been disappointed. You can go down, make it a day trip, or go down and spend the night in a hotel and catch as many movies as you can. A number of our colleagues have done that, and everyone has come back with praise for many of the titles that they've seen. TrueFaults.org is the web page, so you can check that out or Google it and find out more information about the True False Film Festival. Okay, picking up where we left off, we're going to be talking about movies that opened up back on February 17th. And there is a weird amalgam of a romantic comedy and action-adventure film called This Means War, rated PG-13. And this is an odd duck. Reese Witherspoon stars in this romantic comedy about a couple of CIA agents who are at the top of their game. And they are a crack team. You know, this is the kind of thing you would see in a James Bond movie. They really are over-the-top heroes with tremendous skills. Well, they happen to both fall in love with the same woman. And then they start using those tremendous skills against one another. This was a movie directed by a guy named McGee. Thank you for that correction. McGee, who probably is best known for the Charlie's Angels movie.
And that awful Terminator Salvation film.
He did that as well. You're correct. This is one of those movies that, to me, as I watched it, seemed like it was a victim of post-production tinkering. I think that it looks like somebody got in there. Maybe the producer said, this is not working. And they got in there and they started excising things because there's scenes that jump and that there's awkward moments where one's juxtaposed against another and you say, what got left out here?
Yeah.
And you look at it and it seemed to me to be almost amateurish in a lot of ways. Luckily, it's got a great cast. Chris Pine as one of the agents, as well as Tom Hardy, the British actor. They play these crack CIA agents and they're fine. Reese Witherspoon is fine, but their work is kind of in service of a very awkward movie. Now, I have to admit that this is one of those movies that I've talked about with friends who loved it.
Really?
Yes. So my problem with it stemmed mostly from just the critical standpoint, looking back and saying, look at all the mistakes that have been made here. Look at all the problems with, the intricacies of the plot and how it's been edited. I'm going to give it a 2, but I suppose if you really love those cast members, that maybe you might be more generous than me and give it a 3. But I don't think anybody's going to give it more than a 3.
I think this is like becoming McGee's trademark, is that he has this really high production value, like Terminator Salvation and the Charlie's Angels movies, but he can't tell a story. Like, fundamentally, there is something wrong. I know he came from music videos, and there's tons of music video directors who are making great films right now, but this guy just can't tell a story. I mean, that's all it is, What you said about the editing and seeming like things were left out, I felt that way about almost every movie by this guy.
Yeah, maybe it's just the way he wanted it. But it seems, it seems odd to me. But this means we're rated PG-13. I wanted to also let you know that the True False Film Festival is March 1st through the 4th. And so there's still plenty of time for you to get down there to Columbia and see some of those movies. And, you don't need to buy tickets in advance. You can get them there. So, even if you don't check it out in advance, you can still go down there and probably see some really interesting things. Also, we got a contact from Hawkeye from Overland Park, who's curious about what we thought of the movie now out on DVD, Another Earth. Do you want to do a quick recap of Another Earth?
I really liked Another Earth. I thought it was a great example of how you don't need a budget to do something interesting and provocative. It's more of a drama, even though it has science fiction elements. And I just found it quite beautiful and thought-provoking and extremely well-acted.
Yeah, Britt Marling is the lead character in this movie, and she's an actress who I think in the world of independent film just kind of felt like she hasn't been getting the roles that she wanted. So she just decided to write this movie, and her and the director teamed up on the whole thing. It's got William Mapother in it as well. And basically, like Loey said, it's this really intense drama with a very subtle sci-fi element surrounding it. And then, of course, at the end of the film, they bring that concept in a way that is just completely satisfying.
Yeah, I mean, I literally stopped breathing for a second at the end, and I'm like, whoa, okay.
Yeah. And then it ends.
Yeah.
Yeah. I happen to know that I'm going to tell tales here that this is a film that Andrea Salenzi also liked very, very much. So that's another Earth, and it does really show you what can be done on a low budget with some real imagination, and that movie has it in spades for sure. Okay, moving on to other films that have opened. There's one that opened back on February 17th called The Secret World of Arrietty.
Yeah, this is a new film from Studio Ghibli, which is the Japanese animation house, and it's actually based on The Borrowers, the classic Mary Norton books. It's set in Japan, but it's not really too culturally specific, and it's dubbed in English by Will Arnett and Amy Poehler and some other very good sort of character actors. And then it's about the little people who live in this house in the country, and they take tiny things from the home that humans won't miss in order to survive. And the young daughter of this family is seen by the teenage boy who's staying at the house in preparation for heart surgery. And they end up becoming friends, but it also ends up possibly endangering her family. I kind of got dragged to this movie because my nephew wanted to see it, and I can't deny him anything. So, but I loved it. We both loved it. It's not typical of the big Hollywood stuff. It's not in 3D. It's 2D animation. It looks like a painting. It's absolutely
not even computer
gorgeous.
Animation.
No,
yeah.
No. I mean, it's this beautiful, almost watercolor-like animation. And it's kind of slow comparatively. It's very contemplative. But it's just magical. It's so lovely. And we really enjoyed it. And Riley was just, he was excited. He was loving it. So it just really disproves the theory that kids, won't get into anything that's not just coming right at them and making a lot of noise. It's really a very, very beautiful film, and I give it 4 stars. I enjoyed it a lot more than I really expected to, because I thought, oh, here's another Borrowers movie. But yeah, it's quite nice. I liked it.
As I was watching it, I thought, man, this is kind of a nice respite from all of the computer generated animation.
Yeah.
I mean, here we have classic hand drawn animation, and the intricacies of the detail are very impressive in all of the mm-hmm. animation. This is it looks Japanese. It looks like the would it be right for me to say it looks like the kind of thing that they animate when they do manga? I mean,
it's got a lot more of a sort of painterly quality, mm-hmm. I think, than manga normally does. Although the character designs are in that ballpark.
Miyazaki produced it, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
He wrote it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This is the guy who's done Spirited Away,
mm-hmm.
Most recently Ponyo,
right.
Movies like that. And so if you're familiar with that stuff, it's kind of in that vein, right?
Right. And that's The Secret World of Arrietty, which is rated G. Loey gives it a 4. I'll probably give it a 3.5. So anyway, good. It's a good movie. And my only concern as I was watching was thinking, I think maybe small children might be bored with it. So, you might just make a judgment.
Depends on how small. And
yeah.
there's some serious subject matter.
Yes.
I mean, they talk about death. Only a Japanese kids movie would they be sitting around talking about death. But, my nephew's almost 7 and he loved it. So I don't know how much younger than that you could go mm-hmm. necessarily, but,
Right. We had a, somebody wrote us in, Bonnie from Leavenworth, and she said, the least known of the Oscar winners was in the Best Animated Short Film category, The Fantastic Flying Boots of Mr. Morris Lessmore. It's an incredible animation that combines elements of Hurricane Katrina, The Wizard of Oz, Steamboat Bill, Humpty Dumpty, and most importantly, a love of books and perseverance through the love of learning.
Wow.
It's touching and inspiring. It has inspired an iPad app. and publication of a book. It's easily accessible on websites like YouTube and others. I did have a chance to see it, and I totally agree. It won the Oscar for Best Animated Short, and it's definitely worthy, I thought, as well. I'm not sure if they're still playing, but the Oscar-nominated shorts were playing at two local venues, one that was playing at the Tivoli and also at one of the Screenlands. Maybe our intrepid producer, Andrea, can check that
Save
for
us,
Andrea. To make sure that whether or not you can see all of the nominees in different categories. So people often ask me about that. So what's the point of showing this if we don't get a chance to see them? Well, luckily, the art houses have come through and provided an opportunity for us to see those films.
And if not, a lot of them are online.
So. Yeah, absolutely.
True enough. Right. Let's talk about a movie that opened on February 24th. It's a military action flick called Act of Valor. Loey?
Yeah, Act of Valor has a very, very interesting story behind it. It started out as kind of almost a recruitment film by the Navy for the SEALs program. But it's actually directed by two guys who used to be stunt performers. And they had hired actors to play the SEALs and then realized that actors just can't quite play Navy SEALs. So they hired real Navy SEALs to play themselves. And it's a fictionalized version of actual missions and actual events that have occurred over the last several years. And I kept watching it thinking, I really wish this had been a documentary. Because when these guys are just allowed to be who they are and do what they do, it's incredible. Just the professionalism and the skill involved. And they basically told them, okay, here's the point of the scene, and let them plan out how they were going to do it. They used live ammo in most of the action scenes. And since these guys are stuntmen, they know not to, you know, edit the heck out of everything. They just keep the camera rolling. And they use, we were talking before about how they use a lot of camera techniques that you see in video games. But I don't think they stole it from video games. I think the video games stole it from the military. So they're kind of taking it back here. So all of the action scenes and all the scenes of them planning and going through with these missions are great. But the downside is they still wrote a script and fictionalized it. And the script is not well written at all. And these guys, they can't act. They're not acting actors.
They're acting with actual professional actors.
Yeah,
there are
a few professional actors kind of scattered around in supporting roles. And, you know, they get bad dialogue too, but you can tell they've got the experience to at least deliver it in a sort of naturalistic manner. But these poor guys in the SEALs, you know, they're just not cut out for that part. And so anytime that it stops for a dialogue scene or stops to give you a plot twist that's supposed to give you some sort of emotional impact, it's just not there. And I keep thinking, you know, what if they had just interviewed, you know, just done talking head interviews with these guys and let them talk about their lives and, you know, what their families go through and all that, and then shown them doing these, you know, missions or going on training missions with them or something. I think it would have had so much more of an impact, because as it is, it's like half of a really interesting idea, but it just doesn't come together finally. So I can give it a 3 just for what it does do right, but it's one of those things where there's a lot of potential that just is gone.
Yeah, I think you pretty much nailed it. You know, as I was watching it, I thought these guys got their inspiration on how to stage these scenes from Call of Duty. They're playing that game and they're saying, okay, let's do some point of view stuff. Let's put the audience, you know, into the game player's mode. And there's a lot of shots where you see the barrel of the gun sweeping around the room, just like in Call of Duty.
I still think that's backwards, though. I still think Call of Duty stole it from them.
Well, Call of Duty obviously came out before this film did.
Yeah, no, but I mean just the thing of having the cameras
point of view
with you when you're in the missions and that kind of thing. I think that was something the military developed prior to. I don't know for sure, but I think that's something that the video games got the idea of that from actual military hardware.
Probably so. Yeah, and there's a lot of shock and awe in this movie. There's a lot of spent ammunition. And I've heard, I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard that they used live rounds for a lot of this stuff. You know, it's like, whoa, look out. So how much in danger people were, I don't know, but there's certainly a lot of gunfire and explosions and all of the things that will attempt to put you into the shoes of those guys who are actually in there doing these special ops. I would say that I don't think it was intentional on the part of the filmmakers, but there's a little bit of jingoism going on here.
There's a lot of jingoism going on there.
But I think that their intent was to have a patriotic film, to show that these guys are out there doing their duty, that they're out there putting their lives on the line for us. It's a really, you know, one of those things where you want to put the flag up the pole and salute, you know, and that's their intent. And I think they succeeded in that. But there are also some things in it that may make you feel like the rest of the world an enemy, which, you know, that's not, I don't think that was not an intentional slight, I don't believe. But that, I think that one could interpret it that way. But I thought it was a, you know, modestly entertaining film, mainly because of the action sequences, even though you're right, Lloyd, the acting and the script was pretty lame. So I'll give it a 3 as well. So that's a 3 for Act of Valor, rated R. There's another R-rated film, this time a comedy, that's recently come out. That was opened on February 24th, starring Kansas City's own Paul Rudd. It's called Wonderlust. And this is a film that is sort of a, it involves a couple who are, you know, having some financial difficulties, and they wind up through a set of weird circumstances on a hippie commune, right, in rural Georgia. And at first, this kind of seems like an idyllic place, is particularly given all of the troubles that they've gone through, and they want to, in some ways, leave the world behind, the civilized world, and just go for something simpler and more down to earth. And that as things go on, this perception kind of unravels, and it's just not quite the ideal that they thought it was. As I said, it stars Paul Rudd and Jennifer Aniston as the couple who find themselves on this commune. This one really kind of raises the stakes for raunchiness. There's a lot of full frontal nudity. There's a lot of sex jokes, drug jokes. It's everything that you know, that the post hangover world is embracing. But this is a movie that I understand has sat on the shelf for a long time and hasn't had an opportunity until now to be released. Boy, I like Paul Rudd. I like Jennifer Aniston. I think she's good in these roles. But, man, I felt like I got beat over the head by this movie. I mean, I got really, really tired of it. In some ways, as I mentioned with Project X, I felt in some ways similar in my reaction to that. So I'm probably only going to be able to give Wonderlust a 2.
I really enjoyed Wonderlust.
Really?
And I knew that it sat on the shelf. I knew there was this weird bad buzz around it. It's directed by David Wayne, who did Wet Hot American Summer and Role Models, which I thought, Role Models especially, was a fun movie that came out of nowhere for me. But what I really liked about Wonderlust is the fact that instead of just going, yes, there are the cheap jokes, there is nudity and things like that. They are on a hippie commune after all. But what I really enjoyed about it is that there's an effort on Aniston and Rudd's character's part to take this seriously. So what they do is they jump in with both feet and they're really trying to make it work. And I think that earnestness is something that really serves the film well. And Paul Rudd isn't somebody that does earnest a lot. He's such a sarcastic kind of dry-humored kind of guy. It's really nice to see him try it on for size. And I have to say, there's at least 2 scenes in this movie that I think are the funniest thing I have ever seen Paul Rudd do on film. There was one in particular.
Let me guess. Where he's talking into the mirror?
Yeah, he's trying to work himself up for a big moment. And you can tell that, like a lot of the gifted comedic actors in this movie, they're really good at improv. The director just let him go. And it was one of those moments where I was laughing so hard I was crying. And it almost reminded me of what has now become kind of a cult catchphrase from I Love You, Man. His movie with Jason Segel, where he's talking about slapping the bass.
Yeah.
And now I think this might be like a new kind of cult catchphrase, but I was surprised at how much I like Wonderlust. It's certainly unfocused, and some of it doesn't work. The fact that Aniston would be a documentary filmmaker who makes a film about penguins with testicular cancer. That's just, I mean, they're just too ridiculous.
She's bad at every job she does, basically. Yeah. That's kind of her thing,
but when they really try to make this work, I think it works. It's against all odds, even, I think.
Lloyd?
I'm kind of in between you guys. I thought the mirror scene just went on too long, and there's a lot of that in here where it's like, okay, it's funny twice. Let's do it 800 times, you know, and they just kind of keep hammering away.
You're going to love
same
Tim and Eric
gag, you know. And it's like, okay, okay, I'm laughing now. And then later on, I'm like, yeah, move on. Cut. But I agree with you that I like the way their characters are written generally. And I like the fact that, you know, they're so beaten down by normal life that the idea of living on a commune just seems so appealing to them. But then they begin to realize that it's not quite as idyllic as they think. And the people who actually live there, there's actually a pretty good variety of personalities. It's not all the stereotypes you're expecting.
Yeah.
And so you sympathize with, you know, people wanting to live in the modern world with their cell phones and their TVs. And, you know, we all appreciate those things. But you can also see how, you know, just living in a big ramshackle house, growing your own food, you know, lying on a hammock all day, you know, there's definitely some appeal to that, too. And it finds a middle ground, and a very funny middle ground. And I even like the way it ended. In most of these movies, they just sort of ramble on and then stop.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of wrapped up nicely. So I would give it probably a 3.
Okay, 3. And what was your rating?
You know, I sounded really enthusiastic about it. It really is a 3-star comedy. I have to agree with Loie. It's just that I was so surprised by it. And even when it wasn't working, I was still laughing. So.
Okay, I'll give you guys the edge on this one, and we'll average it out. Wonderlust rated R to a 3. I've been informed that, indeed, the Screenland Crossroads is still showing the 2012 Oscar shorts, the live-action versions, for the rest of the weekend, so you still have an opportunity to see those. Now, speaking of the Oscars, I would just like to ask my colleagues here about your overall reaction to what you saw on Sunday night.
It was fine. I didn't have that much reaction.
So enthusiastic.
You know, it was very professional. It moved along at a good clip. I enjoyed it. Billy Crystal did a good job, you know, but nothing special, nothing that really memorable, nothing I'm going to talk about again later. Certainly no real surprises as far as the winners. I wasn't unhappy about the winners, but I wasn't like overly enthused most of the time either. So we were talking before the show, the most interesting things that happened the entire night happened before and after the broadcast, when Sacha Baron Cohen was in character and dumped what he said were Kim Jong-il's ashes all over Ryan Seacrest on the red carpet. And then afterward at the governor's ball when Sean Young got arrested for getting into a fight. But the show itself, you know, it was fine. It was done well, but not done in any particular interesting way.
I thought they did a really good job with comedy this year, and it was balanced, right? Because Billy Crystal has this unique ability to make fun of people, but then you know that he still respects them and enjoys them, right? Mm-hmm. He's not as mean-spirited as somebody like Ricky Gervais. And a lot of his jokes weren't the best, but just having him there, he just has the right vibe for the Oscars.
It's like
and
comfort
I thought,
food.
Yeah. And they made an effort this time with the Christopher Guest improv guys
funny.
Doing their sketch with Robert Downey Jr.'s reality TV show presentation. I mean, there was a lot of comedy that was actually built into the show. And like you said, I think it moved really quickly. In terms of big surprises, I think Meryl Streep was a surprise. I think she was campaigning for Viola Davis, and Viola Davis still lost. And then I think right at the beginning, the cinematography award not going to The Tree of Life, which has the best cinematography of the last decade in it, and another loss for Emmanuel Lusbecki, who was nominated for The Children of Men and also didn't win. That was a shock to me, but everything else was
well. And the editing award for Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah.
The guys who won it were probably more shocked than anybody, and everybody's Oscar pool just went right out the window at that moment.
Yeah, you know, I have a number of friends, as I was mentioning earlier, who whose opinions that I value a lot, and were disappointed that The Artist won Best Picture. I think it's an outstanding movie.
Yeah, I do too.
And it definitely deserves the accolades that it's received. However, some people are saying this happened because of the Oscar makeup of the Oscar voters. There was an article that came out in the Los Angeles Times over the weekend.
They always say that.
That the Oscars, the average age is in the 60s. The preponderance of them are white males. And so you're never going to get a you know, well-rounded, diverse.
A Hurt Locker or a No Country for Old Men. I mean, it does happen. It's changing gradually. But The Artist is not as conventional. I mean, it plays like an old silent movie, but there's actually a lot of little twists and turns to it, and certainly not the kind of movie that, you know, is mainstream and everybody's going to see. So.
Right. Yeah,
I would argue that the artist unfolds very much like a mainstream movie.
Well,
I think
like
the
an
fact
old mainstream from the 20s, maybe, but
I don't know.
But
I
then
think,
as it goes along, though, it becomes less and less traditional, I think.
Ooh.
The way it uses sound and the way that it becomes sort of a metaphor for something much larger. But I guess the show's over. We can't go into
yeah,
that.
Well,
maybe they'll wise up and have an Oscar category for musicals and comedies the way they do at the Golden Globes. I wouldn't think that'd necessarily be a bad thing.
No.
Because comedies
thing.
Are overlooked too
and,
often.
And more slots in the acting categories and directing because too many people get left out every year.
All righty. I want to thank my fellow film critics, Eric Moline, Loie Lockerbie. And I want to remind you that to find our archives and subscribe to the Walt Bodine Show podcast, visit KCUR.org. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi. And our announcer today is Suzanne Hogan. Thanks to my fellow film critics. I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI. This is The Walt Bodine Show. Enjoy your day.